super men and women. People that never make mistakes, people that aren't flawed, people that just do everything right. You typically don't find those folks. Instead, you find people with broken track records and skeletons in their closet and disastrous decisions that they make along the way. But what you find is, in faith, God still continues to use those people to do amazing things. And I think that's one of the most beautiful messages of the entire Bible, because if you're like me and you have a little bit of treads worn off on the tires, you've made your mistakes. You've got those things that you have regrets about. You have those decisions you wish you could go back and change. And there's those moments in life where truly you look up at God and you wonder, how can a God so holy, a God so pure, use someone like me? And it's so reassuring to go to His Word and see He's been doing this since the beginning of time. Right now we're in the book of Esther, and we've really been spending our time focusing on her life and on her situation. Before I get some background on this, I wanted to share with you from a poem that my dad used to read to us a lot as kids. Parents, if you've never heard of this book, there's a wonderful book called The Book of Virtue. And it's just a compilation of great stories about character and poems and things from history, just great ways to teach your kids about character. But one of the poems we read a lot as a child was a poem by Rudyard Kipling called If. And I want to read just a few lines from this poem. It says, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. The poem is longer in its full version, but the point that he gets across is to be a man, you have to be willing at times in life to stand alone. To be a person of character, to be a person of integrity, there are those moments in life where you have to be willing to look at what the crowd says, to what the world says, to what the culture around you says, and realize that that message they share with you is wrong. And you have to be willing to stand against it. You have to be willing to, in faith, stand with God and know that He'll get you through. What I absolutely love about today's story is it talks about what happens when you do that. It talks about being that person that's willing to stand up for what they believe in, no matter the cost, and to risk it all. And brothers and sisters, I love these stories because they're the stories that give you hope that there's a different way to live. There's the stories that invigorate you and want you to go out into the world and to live a different way. I was reading this week and I came across a letter from a 12-year-old little boy who is a newspaper carrier for the San Francisco Examiner. And this is his resignation letter that he wrote to the newspaper he worked for. And remember, this is a 12-year-old. He said, I'm a carrier for the San Francisco Examiner. As provided in Section 14A of the Youth Carrier Delivery Contract, I'm giving the newspaper agency a minimum of 30 days written notice prior to my resignation. Please note, my resignation will go into effect on Tuesday, and he put the date. He said, I'm quitting as a form of protest against a series you printed in early June entitled Gay in America, in the very unprofessional and biased manner in which you report on touchy subjects like gay liberations and abortion issues. I could not in good conscience comply with all the terms of my contract as stated in paragraph 3 and solicit a paper that I personally disagree with. Would you have the courage and the guts to do that? A 12-year-old little boy looks up at the company he works for and goes, you know what? I can't deliver what you're asking me to do because I don't believe in it. My character is worth more than the money you pay me. And what I love is not only is he willing to say that, not only is he willing to just leave, but he lets them know why. Not only am I going to walk away, but I'm going to tell you why I'm going to walk away. I love these kind of stories because it's the people who know they've got to do right, and it's a conviction that they have, not to themselves, not to other people, but a conviction to God that they have to be true in their relationship with Him. I don't know if you remember, but there's a YouTube video you can find in the mid-90s of Mother Teresa being invited to a dinner to speak in front of President Bill Clinton. Well, Clinton was very big on pushing the abortion rights and allowing those things to increase within our country. She gets up to speak at a presentation, and it has nothing to do with abortion. But she begins to give a speech about how abortion is a terrible thing that kills children. And she finishes and she goes, "If you don't want your babies, send your children to me. I will care for them." It's a powerful image because you see this frail little old lady standing there that looks like she couldn't do anything of great magnitude. And here she is boldly standing in front of the most powerful man in the world going, "I will say in front of you what needs to be said." Because no matter the power you have, no matter who you think you are, you can't stop me from doing what I believe to be right. I love these kind of stories. I don't know about you, I read them, and you know what they make me want to do? They make me want to go out and like find a place that I can do something like that. To find an opportunity to stand up for what I believe in. To find an opportunity to be willing to go, "God, I trust in you completely and utterly." I love stories like that, and that's what we see in Esther. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and open up with me to Esther chapter 4. We're doing something a little bit different today. This is the last slide you're going to see this morning. And the reason for that is I just want you to pay attention to the story. Now, for those of you that haven't been with us for the last few weeks, let me just give you a little bit of a catch-up. Let me give you the background of what we've been talking about. Esther is a Jewish young lady who lives in Persia. So she lives under a king and under a government and under a rule that does not respect her God Yahweh, does not abide by his rules, does not appreciate his culture. And this young girl has grown up and in her great beauty has found herself now as the queen of the mighty King Xerxes. Now the thing about Esther is, not everything she did to become queen was what you would necessarily call righteous or godly. But now as she sits as queen of this country, she has run into a situation where she has to decide what kind of person is she. For what's happened is a man by the name of Haman has passed a law which will basically allow for the complete and utter annihilation of the Jewish people. And the king, King Xerxes, has signed this and has made it law. Now, I want you to remember back with me where Mordecai, her cousin, he's this Jewish man that raised her, encourages her to take action. So if we turn to Esther chapter 4, look with me at verse 16. I'm sorry, in verse 15. It said, "Then Esther said this reply to Mordecai, 'Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. If I perish, I perish.'" We left off and Esther has made the decision that she is going to present herself to the king. She's going to put it all on the line. See, back in those days, if you presented yourself to the king and he hadn't called for you, the most likely reaction was he would have you put to death for entering his presence unannounced. The only chance you had is that if when you entered his court, if he put favor upon you, he would pull out his scepter and lay it upon you, and that would save you. So Esther, by just simply even going to the king, is risking her very life. But she's told Mordecai, "I'm willing to do this. And if I die, I die." I want you to look at chapter 5. It says, "On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall." Now, I want you to see something. What happened between verses 4 and 5? 3 days passed. 3 days of prayer, 3 days of fasting, 3 days of focusing on the Lord. And brothers and sisters, I want to highlight this to you because sometimes in life, this is one of the biggest mistakes we make. Sometimes in life, you and I hit one of those stressful moments in life. You hit one of those moments where you feel like everything is against you. It feels like the world around you is crumbling upon you. You ever get that feeling where like the tension on your chest just feels like you're being torn apart? You ever felt that? the anxiousness, that worry where you're trying to tell yourself everything will be okay, but you just can't shut your brain off. You know, most of us in those times, you know what we do? We think about what could happen. We think about what could go wrong. We think about what could go right. We try to tell ourselves that God will be there. We have all of these conversations and thought processes, but you know what a lot of us don't do? We don't just pray. And there's a difference between thinking about the situation that you're in and in actually having a conversation with the Almighty God. There's a difference between thinking about all that could go wrong and bowing at the feet of God and going, God, what is your plan in this moment? One of my favorite verses in the Bible, one of the ones that you see plastered about almost anything if you go to Family Christian, is in Isaiah. In Isaiah, it talks about what God will do for His people. Chapter 40, verse 31, it says, "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint." It tells us that go to the Lord will find that strength we're missing. We'll rise up like an eagle soaring. And you know what that gives you? It gives you perspective. It gives you a different perspective. And it says that you will walk and not grow weary. It will give you the perseverance that you need to face the obstacle that's in your way. Brothers and sisters, when you are in your worst day, when you are in your busiest moment, that's the time that you need the most prayer. That's the time that you need to sit with God and get right before Him. Because in your conversations with Him, He will present to you the next step to take. He will show you the path to go upon. Philippians chapter 4, verse 6 says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Go to God. Share with Him, and He will give you the peace you need to make it through. You know, as I read chapter 5, and I think about her standing there on the third day in a royal robe, standing in front of that inner court, waiting for the king, I kind of imagine, how did she psych herself up? Do you have your own process? Does everybody in here have their psych-up process that they go through when they have that big day or that big meeting or that big moment, and you got to get yourself ready? You got to get yourself in the mode? You know, some people, they like to listen to the same song, you know. I mean, it might be Tom Petty, "I Won't Back Down," maybe, I don't know. Could be something else. But people have the processes they go through. I was sitting there this week as I was reading this, and I wonder, what kind of person was she? Was she the kind that in her bedroom, she's getting dressed, she's getting ready, she has that moment looking in the mirror, and she's ready to go, and once she leaves, she would just, boom, like a bullet, walked right there, burst those doors open, and walked in? Or does she have that moment where she's standing at the doors going, "Oh my gosh, I'm here. It's actually about to happen"? Have you ever had those moments? I remember when we were sitting in the hospital waiting for my son to be born. It was like 9 months of all this buildup and expectation, and you knew it was coming. You're building furniture, you're painting rooms, you're buying clothes. You know it's going to happen. But then you're actually sitting there that day and you're going, "This is real." It's actually happening. And the weight feels a lot different on that day than it does at any other point. And I wonder, how did she feel in that moment? I mean, to imagine just standing at two doors knowing that literally the moment they open, it is life or death for you. Life or death. Yeah, I wonder, like, did she have that voice in her head telling her to run? Walk away? Go back? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because what we do know is whatever she went through that day, she had the faith and the courage to walk through those doors and do what she knew needed to be done. Now, brothers and sisters, there's something very important about that I want us to understand, because it impacts our own lives. See, sometimes in life, what you and I want is we're fine with going to God in prayer. We're fine with going to God and talking to Him about the situations that we're in. But do you know what we want? We want God to go, all right, Luke, let's sit down and talk about this. Here's the next 5 steps. And this is exactly how it's going to go. But a lot of times when we see God act, you know when it is? It's after we've jumped off the cliff. It's after we've stood at that edge where we know everything behind us, we now have to leave, and it's time for me to take a leap of faith. What we want is we want Him to come and show us, well, hey, when you leap, here's what's going to happen. But a lot of times He doesn't do that. A lot of times He simply comes to you and goes, jump, I'll catch you. Just jump, I got you. And for so many of us in life, that is that moment where fear hits our hearts and we don't leap. It's why some of us can be on the same cliff of faith our entire lives. Knowing that we should jump, knowing that God will catch us, trying to convince ourselves that we're ready for that, but the fear grips us and we just don't move. It's why if you go into the Bible, you know what you'll find is the most repeated command over and over again? Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Because what does fear do? It locks you in place. It stops you from moving forward. You have to be willing in life to take those leaps of faith. Hebrews chapter 11 verse 1 says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. The conviction of things not seen. It is that ability to know that when you jump, even though you can't see anything, God's got you. Brothers and sisters, that's what we have to do more of. That's what we have to do more of, is be willing to go to God and go, God, I'll do what you want me to do. And I'll trust that you'll take care of it. Even though I'm really scared right now. Even though I don't know how it's going to work out. I know, Father, that I can have hope in what I cannot see. Now read with me and see what happens. Chapter 5, verse 1, it says, the king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. The king asked, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be given you. If it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet that I have prepared for them. I don't know about you, but there's so many things in between the lines. How relieved do you think she felt when that scepter reached out to touch her? My goodness, like she probably, right? Unbelievable amount of relief that she's gone in, she's jumped off the cliff, she's risked it all, and what does he do? He goes, Queen Esther, what do you want? You know what I love about Xerxes? You can tell the kind of greed in him. He likes her because he says, I'll give you up to half the kingdom. Not the whole thing, but half. We have our limitations here. How relieving must those words have been? But there's something curious that happens. If you're Queen Esther, and your people are about to be wiped out, and your biggest fear was that the king was going to kill you, when he walks in and goes, what's your request? Would you respond to the way she does? What does she say? Hey, I'd like to have a party for you and for Haman. Is there a party that's going, wait a minute? Haman's the guy that wants to wipe your people out. And you get before the king and what you ask for is to have a party and invite the king and invite your enemy. Why would you do this? Why would you do this? See, what I want you to see and what's beautiful about this is when we truly talk to God, when we truly prepare with God, when we truly get in tune with Him, it allows us to not only go into things with faith, but it also allows us to go in things in control. One of the biggest things that you and I struggle with in this world, especially in America, is we are a country of emotions. Think about it. All the advertisements you see, everything you do, most of the advice that friends will give you is, do what feels good. Go with your gut. Do what you feel right. Feel, 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 feel. Now, we've talked about this before. Are emotions a valuable thing in life? Absolutely. Are they trustworthy, though? No. Now, why do I say that? I say that because I can guarantee you I could walk into HEB and tick somebody off in 30 seconds. Don't even have to know them, don't have to know their names, their hopes, their dreams, their passions, where they grew up. I don't even know anything about them, but I can make them absolutely furious in at least 30 seconds. And at the same time, I could probably make the same person unbelievably happy. And so what you learn about these emotions is they're so easy to generate. And if we just do what we feel, so often we'll find we're doing something in the wrong way. Remember back to our last person we talked about, Moses. This was one of Moses' problems. He had a passion in his heart to protect the Israelite people. And when he sees one of his brothers in trouble and being beat, what does he do? He emotionally reacts. In rage, he murders a man. And then what does it do? Does it promote and push forward the will of God? No. It puts him on a sidetrack. It puts him on a whole new path in life that eventually God's able to correct, but he goes down the wrong way. We as Christians need to be willing to not only love God in an emotional way, but with our minds. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, Jesus tells to his disciples when he sends them out, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves." Jesus tells us, be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves. The key is, don't be deceivious. Don't be backhanded, but be smart. You're at war. You have people plotting against you. Use the brain that I have given you. Use the soul that I have given you to make plans that make sense. And when you read through this with Esther, you see this woman and her faith in God has made a brilliant plan. Instead of walking in and emotionally demanding the death of Haman, she instead says, "King, let's throw a party." And let's be real. Do we remember King Xerxes at the beginning of the book? Do you remember what he had done? Partied for like 180 days? When King Xerxes hears about a party, do you think he wants to go? Absolutely. And remember Haman. Haman was the man that was angry at Mordecai. Why? Because when everybody else would bow before him, he wouldn't. Do you think this guy's going to feel honored to be the private guest of the king and queen? Absolutely. She's playing them at their own weaknesses. Continue on with me. In verse 5 it says, "Bring Haman at once," the king said, "so that we may do what Esther asks." So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king again asked Esther, "Now what is your petition? It will be given to you. And what is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted." Now, at this point, you're surely thinking she's going to tell him, right? She's absolutely going to tell him what's going on and why they're here. But listen to her. Verse 7, Esther replied, "My petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's request." She goes, "You know what? This is so much fun. Let's have another party. Come back tomorrow night. We'll do this again, and then I'll tell you what you're asking for." Now, what's beautiful about this is we have the beauty to see how the story ends right away, and so we know how this plays out. What's crazy, though, is in the moment, you go, what is this woman doing? What is she doing? But the key is, she's waiting for God's timing. She's waiting for God to do His work and not trying to force things on her own. Look at verse 9. Haman went out that day very happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Calling together his friends and Zeresh, his wife, Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways the king had honored him and how he had elevated him above the other nobles and officials. "And that's not all," Haman added. "I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to the accompaniment of her king to the banquet that she gave. And she has invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that the Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate." His wife Zeresh and his friends said to him, "Have a gallows built, 75 feet high, and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go with the king to the dinner and be happy." This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the gallows built. I don't know about you, but is this the kind of friend you'd like to have? Friends, please come to my house so I can tell you how awesome I am. We're going to have a beautiful day. I will tell you how I am honored, how I am rich, how I'm amazing, and then I'm going to complain to you about the one bad thing that did happen, which is this one guy won't recognize that I'm awesome. Man, I am glad I don't have friends like Haman. Now, some of you are looking at me, so that means you do have friends like Haman. Or you're the friend like Haman. This guy is, wow, is this a blowhard or what? Is he puffed up on who he thinks he is? And talk about having the wrong kind of people in your life. What's their advice? Hey, get over it. Life's good. There's always haters. No, you know what? You should build a gallows 75 feet high, and you should kill this guy. Talk about having bad advice in your life. But I want you to pay attention to these details, because it's beautiful how they all come back into play. In chapter 6, verse 1. That night the king could not sleep. Now, you remember how I told you in the book of Esther, there's one person not mentioned? God's name never shows up, but his fingerprints are all over it. Why do you think the king couldn't sleep that night? I'm pretty sure it's because God didn't want him to sleep that night. The older I get, the more I see life go by, the more I realize there is no such thing as coincidence in life. It is the fingerprints of God upon our lives. That night the king could not sleep, and he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. It was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthani and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. Isn't this brilliant? Remember at the beginning of the book we were told about Mordecai saving the king's life, but nothing really happened with it? In fact, what was the result? Haman got promoted. How beautiful that Queen Esther goes, hey, let's wait one more night. And what happens that night? The king can't sleep. He's hit with insomnia. So what does he do? He does what I like to do, which is go sit in front of the couch and put on boring infomercials and hope that they'll lull me to sleep. Back then they didn't have those, so what does he decide? What's the most boring thing we could read? Why don't you read to me the laws of all the things that have happened since I've been king? And in the midst of trying to bore himself to sleep, he hears a story that he goes, wait a minute. Two guys were trying to kill me and this guy Mordecai stopped that? Wait a minute, I'm awake now. Let's go over that story again. And look what happens. Verse 3, what honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this? The king asked. Nothing has been done for him, his attendants answered. The king said, who is in the court? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows. He had erected for him. His attendants answered, Haman is already in the court standing. Bring him in, the king ordered. When Haman entered, the king asked him, and pay attention to this, this is just, I love this part. When Haman entered, the king asked him, what should be done for the man the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought to himself, who is there that the king would rather honor than me? So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn, and a horse the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor, and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man that the king delights in. Go at once, the king commanded Haman. Get the robe and the horse, and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything that you have recommended. Do you see what just happened? This is the story I remember when people tell me the Bible's boring. Haman walks in. You want to honor somebody? He's going, oh, you want to honor me? Thank you. Thank you. I'm awesome. And he goes, hey, what would I want? I want one of your robes. I want one of your chariots. I want people proclaiming how great I am as I watch through the city. And then what does the king do to him? He goes, fantastic idea. Do that for Mordecai. Can you imagine what his face must have looked like at that moment? Come again? What? Do this for who? Do you realize why I'm here right now? I'm here to ask for that man to die. What's beautiful, though, is the power of the king so great? Does Haman complain? He can't. Can he refuse this? No, he can't. And again, a beautiful lesson is taught us here. Remember, Haman used the power of the king to try to kill the people of Israel. That was where his faith and his hope was. And now the Almighty God of the people of Israel, our God Yahweh, goes, if that's the power you want to live by, so it will be. I will use that power against you. I will use the very thing you tried to use against my people, against you in your own life. Remember, God is the God of everyone. Just as much as He can use the godly and the righteous, He can use the evil and the wicked. And in this kingdom of Persia, in the life of a man named Haman, and in the power of a king named Xerxes, God is showing that power. Watch what happens. So Haman got the robe, this is verse 11, and the horse. He robed Mordecai, and look, he had to do it himself. He robed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor." Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief. And he told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had happened to him. His advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, "Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman away to the banquet that Esther had prepared. Talk about a day going different than you thought. This man woke up and thought today was going to be the best day of his entire life because of all the deception and all the sin and all the wickedness that he had used in his life. And instead it becomes the very worst. The man he wishes dead gets honored as he wishes to be honored. And not only that, but now that Mordecai is in favor of the king's eyes, what do you think is going to happen when the king remembers that he's going to kill Mordecai and the Jewish people? You think he's going to be happy about that? Even his own wife and friends look at him and go, it's over. It's done. Brothers and sisters, what I want you to get from today's lesson is two things. One, have faith in your God. Have faith in your God. Brothers and sisters, being a Christian is simply the greatest adventure the world has ever known. It's not boring. It's not about rules. It's not about regulations. It's not about trying to live your life by some code or some way. It's about a relationship with the most amazing being in the entire universe. It's about being in love with a God that loves you so purely and so completely and will use you to do things beyond your wildest dreams. I mean, one of the things I love about following God is He continually blows me away with what He wants to do in my life. His dreams are always better than my own. And so instead of waking up each day going, man, so hard to be a Christian, I'm just excited for the opportunity to walk by Him. And excited to see what is the next journey that He wants me to go on. Have faith in God and be willing to take those leaps because He's going to catch you. The second thing I want you to see is I want you to see what happened to Mordecai. When Mordecai first saved the king's life and then watched Haman be promoted, do you think he thought life was fair? No. In fact, if we probably could have been his friends then, we would have heard those conversations that you and I hear almost every week. Some friend or some family member talking about how life's unfair. How about there's no justice? How about bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? Shoot, sometimes that's one of the hardest things to live with in life. And shoot, sometimes we try to change it. Sometimes we try to take justice into our own hands. Sometimes in life we try to force and make things right. What I want you to see, though, is life is more fair than you think. Because, brothers and sisters, the seeds that we sow, we one day will reap that harvest. may not be in the time that we expect. Mordecai didn't know that when he got passed up for recognition at that time, that was actually going to be a great thing. And because instead of that recognition coming in his time, it came in God's time, it blessed his life so much more. And brothers and sisters, I promise you, the seeds that you have sowed in life, the seeds that you have planted of love and of faith and of hope, you may be looking at the garden going, man, nothing's blooming. But I promise you, one day they will. I promise you, one day you'll walk out and you'll go, where did this come from? One day you're going to stand before the very presence of the Almighty God. And you know what He's going to say to you? Well done, my good and faithful servant. Brothers and sisters, the actions that we do on a day-to-day basis plant the seeds that will be the legacy of our lives. Plant seeds of love, of hope, of faith, of goodness. And I promise you, one day we'll see that harvest. Whether it's here in this world, or whether it's one day up there standing before the Almighty. Our God is a God of fairness, and He is a God of justice. Let go of things and trust in Him, and I promise you, it will come through. I'm excited. Next week we finish up Esther. Because remember, while things have turned out well for Mordecai right now, who's still hanging in the balance? Esther and the entire nation of Israel. And we're going to watch how God closes the chapter on this book. Now, feel free. Go ahead. You can read ahead. Get the spoiler alerts. I'm fine with that. But just enjoy this book. Because it's so unbelievably entertaining and yet so amazing in all the stories that it teaches us. And it just points out that even though God's name isn't mentioned, He is an amazing God. Let us pray.